This is a pretty cool day. I'm a product of my environment. We are a product of our environment. And our environment sometimes is as small as our household or our classroom or the city we live in, and sometimes it is the world. And how we interact with our environment is usually up to us individually. How far are we willing to go out of our comfort zone to engage, to make a difference? To hear about Lindsay and the effects that she's had on so many, that's it. The change will be exponential. It's beyond the moment of time with the people, but what those people carry with them for the rest of their lives and others that they inspire. I am truly privileged to be here today with such an amazing lady. Thank you. I have made it a point to thank the teachers because I was not a good student. I ended up starting a scholarship at my high school, and I go back, and some of the teachers that were my teachers are still teachers, and I go back and I make my rounds of apologies and tell them how important what they did that I didn't realize then was, but how much I appreciate it now. And I don't think you truly know until later in life, and you're like, I know this answer, or I know how to take this situation because of what was instilled in me. My actions were instilled in me. They were expected not of me, but of us. You know, I grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, a city about 120,000 folks in eastern Iowa. Life was good. You do good things happen to you. Do bad things, and bad things will happen to you. It's pretty simple. And I remember I was in high school, my junior year of high school, and I was sitting in chemistry class early morning because that's when the smart kids went to chemistry class, and it was kind of like a team thing in chemistry. And so it's good to be on a good team. That's important, right? You don't need to be the smartest person. Just be with other smart people. Pick your team wisely. I did early morning chemistry. And someone came to the classroom. And they said, hey, turn on the television. A plane just flew into a building in New York. And thought in this small plane in this big building in this terrible accident, and we turned it on, and it was this big plane in this big building in this terrible accident. And then as the second plane flew in, it became apparent that it wasn't an accident. It was an attack on America, not our camouflage-wearing, gun-toting, military strategic target, but on our way of life. And that was when I saw just because you do good things doesn't mean good things happen. And it takes someone to stand up and be willing to be uncomfortable for others so they can have what they deserve. And I remember I called my mother up and I'm like, hey, Mom, I think I'm going to join the Army. She said, Salvatore, absolutely not. You're 17 years old. Go back to class. I understand this is a big deal. We'll talk about it when you get home. And this idea of service, this idea of selflessness, I want to tell you it was everlasting, but it wasn't. It was fleeting for me. I was 17 years old. It quickly became about I and me, and do I have a date to the dance tonight, and do I have to work this week, and how much fun can we have without getting in trouble? That idea of service left me. And my senior year was coming to an end, and you know, I didn't have any of these great ambitions. My folks were on my case about SATs and ACTs, and I was like, I'm a sandwich artist, and I make delicious subs for people to enjoy. It's not my career, but it's a great stepping stone to something greater, and I'm happy with where I'm at. And so I was mopping the floor at Subway, you know, 10:30 at night or something, and a radio commercial came on. It was like, come on down, see a recruiter, get a free T-shirt. I'm mopping the floor at Subway at 10:30 at night. Of course I want a free T-shirt. And so I went in, and the recruiter's there, and I'm expecting him to give me this spiel. And I understand sales a little bit. Keep your eye on the prize. Don't let them persuade you either way. Eye on the prize. Don't leave here without the shirt. Got it. And I walked in, and he said something I wasn't prepared to hear. He told me the truth. He said, we're a nation at war. You're an 18-year-old able-bodied male. If you want to make a tangible difference in the country that gave you absolutely everything, join the United States Army. It's like, whoa. That was awesome. I think you should tell everyone who walks in here that, because that was super impactful. But so the radio commercial said, I get a free T-shirt. I felt like that was our talk. And he said, well, you know, we have this test. Take this test, this ASVAB test. It takes a couple hours to take. And I'm like, perfect, a test that doesn't matter so I can show my parents that I'm being proactive in pursuing a better future with no consequences other than a couple hours of testing. I'm in. I took the test, and the results came back, and they said I could do anything I wanted in the United States Army. No one's ever said that to me before. Usually they're like, Sal, if you redo what you just did and make it a whole lot better than you did the first time, anything you want after that, the world's your oyster. No one usually leads with anything you want, and I'm an easily excitable guy, and so I was thinking, man, what do I want? I don't even know what I want, and I'm thinking real fast because now's the time to decide because I'm 18 years old and I'm excited, and the dude said, whatever I want, and so there's this parachute hanging from the ceiling. I promise you, I did not fully anticipate joining the Army that day, and this was like the first of a few meetings, but this was the first down a road. And I was like, I saw a parachute hanging on the ceiling. I'm like, I want to jump out of planes. He goes, yeah, airborne. Pays $150 extra dollars a month. I'm like, that is 100% exactly what I want to do. And he said, well, check this out. You know, that's not a job. That's like a supplement to a job. So you got to like pick something you want to do. I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, well, what are you good at? I'm like, spitting, swearing, probably be pretty good at jumping out of planes. That's a gravity thing. Got that figured out. I want to leave Iowa. And he said, airborne infantry, that's a job. You're going to love it. It's everything you just said. And I was like, all right. Very naive. A chance to serve my country. I had no idea what airborne infantry was, but it paid $150 extra dollars a month just for gravity's work. And I joined, and I learned something. I'd been on teams before. I played baseball and basketball and golf and football. And when you win as a team, you lose as a team. And you're only as strong as the weakest link. And all these other adages that we've been taught throughout our life. And then I saw something. Something changed in basic training. Because out of all the things I thought I was going to learn, the first thing I learned was I got a best friend. It's interesting that I got a best friend in basic training. Not surprising, but interesting. Like the first thing, they start yelling at everyone, push-ups, sit-ups, whatever. I got a best friend, and I know that because the drill sergeant said, Junta, this is Gibson. Gibson, this is Junta. You two are best friends. Don't leave each other's side. Got a best friend out of it. But something else with that best friend is we were peers. And yet when I did something wrong, Gibson was in trouble. And when Gibson did something wrong, I was in trouble. And so out of soul self-preservation, we were looking out for one another because we just didn't want to be in trouble, right? And it wasn't because either of us got paid more or was more responsible. It's that they were instilling that the team is always better together. There is no one person in this room that's better than every person in this room. And that's not just this room. That's that room out there. And it's rooms all around the city and all around the world right now. And so thinking about finding your team, creating a common goal and working towards it. And sometimes the goal can just be self-preservation, and other times it can be instilling and inspiring the youth, and other times it can just be darn right changing the world. What you set your goal on, I should say this, it is very difficult to get something that you don't create as a goal. Every once in a great while, some neat opportunity lands on your lap. But when you set a goal and you strive for a goal and you work towards a goal, you are far more likely to reach that goal than you are by accident. And so don't be afraid to set a lofty goal. Don't be afraid to set that goal so high no one's ever achieved it before, because it can be and should be achievable. I never thought I'd be here in front of folks today. Like I said, I mean, they said I could spit, swear, jump out of planes, fight bad guys, and leave Iowa. Check. But what does that mean? I was thinking about this organization. When I joined, that's what I joined for. I didn't realize what the Army actually was. And they sent me over to Vicenza, Italy, in the Veneto province, just outside of Venice. And that was going to be my home. And on weekends, we'd go travel to Austria or Germany, or we'd travel Italy. And I got to see all these other places. At that point in my life, I'd been to like 5 states in my life, and they were either the state of Iowa or touched the state of Iowa. And all of a sudden, by the time I was 21 years old, I'd been to 26 countries in the world. And I got to see the different of ideas and experiences. And I got to say, hey, I really like this over here, but I don't like that over here. And what do you do with that information? I think the most positive thing is to do is to share it, to grow from it, to tell people, hey, we can do this. Or, hey, let's make sure we avoid that. And so my time in the military was a super influential time. I was 18 to 26 years old. I spent all my time over in Europe. I did 2.5 years in Afghanistan. My 2.5 years in Afghanistan taught me that war is ugly And war is awful, and it's terrible, and it's disgusting, and it's unforgiving. And it should be our last choice. Words should work. We should strive to make words work. We can draw a hard line, but we need to make our words work. We are smart enough that we don't have to fight about everything. My second trip in Afghanistan, I was supposed to already be out of the army. I only joined for 4 years, but they deemed me key and essential. Awesome, kind of a little, I can pat myself on the back, but what that got me was an extra year in the army and an extra year in Afghanistan. And something different happened in that year, though. I became a leader. I got to look at my guys and tell them what my leader said to me. I got to say, hey, check this out, follow me. I didn't say, go do that. I said, follow me. I didn't say, hey, I need you to do this. I said, well, let me show you, right? I got to be that hands-on, small group leader, and it was awesome. Outside of having kids, it's probably one of the neatest things I've ever done is engage and inspire and instill ideas and opportunity for others. On that second tour, we'd been in my lifetime at that point, I'd probably been in over 300 gunfights. That second tour that night of my actions was not unlike any other night. There was 18 of us on a mountain in the Hindu Kush on the northeast corner of Afghanistan walking in the dark. We were going back to a place that had no power, no running water. We'd been from a place that had no power, no running water, and we were walking the mountains. The difference that night is the proximity. And we hadn't seen them take our wounded before. And that night they did. And so with the story that was kind of told, and I read what was in the flyer, I don't want to recount it by any means, but I want to tell you about it because I can't stand here and tell you that I'm the man. I can tell you we are. I can tell you what we did. And when I ran forward the first time, it was because Gallardo got shot in the head, got shot in the helmet. I actually thought he got shot in the head. He went down. I just figured I couldn't see him get shot up anymore, so I ran to grab Gallardo. When I grabbed Gallardo, I ran back to where Casey and Clary were. Casey's from Tallahassee, Florida. Clary's from Spokane, Washington. They're shooting as much as they can, so I'll just hide behind their wall of bullets. When I dropped Gallardo off, the first thing Gallardo did, he came to, and he said, throw grenades. So the bullet hit his helmet, knocked him out. I thought he was dead. His very first words were, throw grenades. I promise you, I've been knocked out a lot of times. The first words out of my mouth are always, what happened? It is. You're laying on your back. People are looking down on you, and it's like, whoa, what happened? Like, dude, you see the, what was the last thing you remember? That baseball coming towards your head? Like, yeah, I guess so. He said, throw grenades. Selflessness. Right there. He didn't say, I think I got shot in my head. I have no idea what's going on. He said, throw grenades, right? To snap back and put yourself in the moment to make a difference. When he said that, I started throwing grenades. Clary from Spokane, Washington, he was shooting this M249 SAW. It shoots about 800 rounds per minute. Looks like a dragon blowing fire at night. I promise you, the way bullets go out are the same way bullets come in. And so when you look like a dragon blowing fire, you got a big target on you. And so that doesn't benefit Clary. That benefits us. He drew attention. I'm sorry, Casey. Clary had this M203, shoots a fist-size grenade that shot out of a tube, takes 15 meters to arm. He's lobbing grenades. That's one of the greatest things about professionals is you don't have to tell a professional what to do. You let the professional do what they're a professional in. You can move on to the next task. Sometimes there's more boxes to check than people to check them, and when you're going down the checklist, you just need to divide and conquer. And we were divide and conquering that night. When Gallardo said throw grenades, I started throwing grenades and running forward. I saw Eckrode on the ground. Eckrode was shot twice in the leg, twice in the chest. Gallardo was already at Eckrode when I got to Eckrode. We ran together. The fact that Gallardo had Eckrode made Eckrode okay. That's belief that someone else can fulfill the same role that you can. No need for two people in one spot. You got them, I'll move. It would have been vice versa if I would have been there first. I ran forward and looking for Brennan. What I didn't realize is the book says in a near ambush situation, you charge the ambush line, you create chaos in their ranks, they create chaos in yours. Last man standing's on the winning team. A 75% casualty rate is an acceptable success rate. If you lose only 3 out of every 4 people, they'll pat you on the back and say, good job on defending that ambush. That's super bad to read, and it's super worse to know you're in that situation. And I was not running towards the ambush. I was running north and south, and the ambush was to the west. I came up on a spot where we should have had another guy, and he wasn't there. That was Brennan. Brennan was the kind of guy who always led from the front. He was our point man. I knew what he did. He charged the ambush line, so I didn't run to charge the ambush line. I ran the run after my buddy so we could grow that team I was talking about. And when I ran through, most of the fire was on Casey and Clary, and I came up on this opening, and I saw something I wasn't really familiar with seeing, and it was two people carrying one person and running away. And it was the enemy carrying Sergeant Brennan. I did exactly what I was trained to do, nothing more, nothing less. I eliminated the threat, I grabbed my buddy, and I took off running back the direction I came. This entire time, we had Apache TAC helicopters in the sky circling, but because of the close proximity of all this gunfire, they didn't engage. Not making a decision is making a decision, right? Not choosing to do something is making a decision. And they did that, and that was our protection. The second we created that gap, the Apaches went to work. That bigger picture, just because they weren't on the ground sweating and bleeding and hungry with us doesn't mean they're not part of the solution, right? That bigger picture. Above them, we had a Spectre C-130 gunship about 36, 35,000 feet up in the air overwatching us. Everyone's looking after the next person down. I think about that moment in time, and it is such a small sliver of time, but it is humanity. It's not about camouflage and guns and anger and dislike or conquering. It's about love, care, and compassion for what you have. When what you have is worth protecting at all cost. When what you have is so precious that you want to share that with someone else. I never thought I'd be in that situation, and after that situation, nothing changes. That's called a day in combat. It's a bad day in combat, but just another day in combat. We stayed in that valley until July 29, 2008, and that was October 25, 2007. It was a 6-kilometer by 6-kilometer valley. We were pretty busy in that valley, and we left. And I learned something. It's important to set a standard. And when you set a standard, it's up to you to hold that standard. You be the standard bearer. I can say, I expect this out of you, but I promise you, I expect this out of me. We're not gonna dip below the standard, and you have to hold everyone accountable. And that means calling people on the carpet sometimes and correcting the wrong. And sometimes it's publicly so we can learn the lesson of the individual. But as much as that can be necessary at times, it is necessary to celebrate and congratulate the good that is done. To call them on the carpet and say, this happened because this person did this and this team did that, and that's why we're in a better position than we were yesterday, holding them up. I think about Lindsay today, and I think about what she did and holding her up, about what she's done, what she's chose to do with her lifetime, but then listening to her students speak, I don't know where he's at right now, incredible words, wildly articulate. Grabbed my attention, held my heart, squeezed it for a long time, gave me hope. I promise you, absolutely incredible. It's exponential the impact you can make when you put others first. I had listened to Flo earlier. I love Flo. I've known Flo for about 10 years now. We both live in the North Texas area. And he said, hey, man, I can't make this. Can you do it? And I'm like, man, I got 3 kids at home. No one listens to me, so yeah, they're gonna give me a microphone and I'm gonna have a captive audience. I can't wait to be listened to again. I want you to know what we have is truly special and it's worth defending, and it's not camouflage and guns, it's care and compassion. And through your sponsorship, through taking the time, through mentorship and counsel, this room right here, right now, is making a huge difference, not just in North Texas, but around the world. I appreciate you listening. I get so fired up. Thank you.